You're listening to an archived version of the PDF Network call featuring special guest Scott Dumwalt, project director for the It Gets Better project, on the subject, Anatomy of a Social Media Success. The call was recorded on March 31st, 2011, in partnership with N10, and is presented here in its entirety. For more information on the PDF Network and upcoming calls, please visit personaldemocracy.com.
Okay, hello everybody. This is Micha Cipri from Personal Democracy Forum, and welcome to another of our ongoing series of conference calls with movers, shakers, thinkers, doers in the space of politics and technology, activism, both in the political arena and the nonprofit arena. As always, we're thankful to AT&T, who has been sponsoring these calls, and this week to our partners at N10 for making this call possible. We're really excited today to be joined by Scott Dumwalt from It Gets Better, which is a really exciting example of how you can build a movement and an organization for real change that can make a difference in people's lives that starts with just passionate viral video. As with all our calls, what we're going to do is start the call with just me and Scott talking, and then about halfway through, we will open up the call to Q&A from folks who are listening. And at that point, I'll ask people to queue up by hitting *6 on their phones so that we can see who wants to ask a question. We're also going to be following the conversation on Twitter. Use PDF Network as your hashtag. And if people have questions there, they can also pose them there. But to start out, Scott, what would be great is if you could give us just a quick capsule of your background and how you came to be involved with It Gets Better and sort of how the whole movement got launched. And you know, take your time. Give us a full picture for people who may not be as familiar with the whole story.
Sure thing. Thanks again. I just want to thank everyone for joining. It's really incredible to talk about this project with other people. And you know, it's really changing a lot of things, both in LGBT politics, but also new media. So it's the best of both worlds for me. My name is Scott Dumwalt. I'm the project manager for the It Gets Better project. First got involved back in early October, which was about a week or two after it first started. My background mainly is in political activism and politics. This is my first run at LGBT politics. I previously worked for Governor Tom Vilsack for 2 years doing his new media, then worked for Hillary Clinton in a number of primary and caucus states that I probably don't want to talk about anymore, and also then served as Senator Kay Hagan's new media director in North Carolina. After the campaign, I left and joined Blue State Digital in Washington, D.C., where I served as a account lead on a number of our nonprofit clients, including the American Red Cross, which was a very fun and exciting and really inspiring account to be a part of, especially during the Haiti earthquake. After that, I was going to take a year off and go back to graduate school. Then my old boss called me up and said they needed help with this project because they were doing it pro bono, and you know, you can only do so much when you're investing hundreds of thousands of dollars into a website. So they asked me to take it on, and, you know, my good friends at Blue State Digital were like, here you go, and got to meet Dan Savage up in New York, and we hit it off, and he gave a great speech at Rutgers, which was about a month after the tragedy there. And from then on, it just kind of took off and had to drop out of graduate school and been doing it for about 5 or 6 months since. And it's been one of the best and most rewarding jobs that I've ever had. Now I'll give you a little bit more background of the project itself. I mentioned Dan Savage, but Dan Savage and his partner Terry Miller, they're based in Seattle. Dan is a syndicated columnist for The Stranger. Many of you probably know him as that sex advice columnist in Seattle that talks about gives a real talk about what you should do in your relationship life. And he's actually one of the columns that my friends read the most. So when they found out I was working for him, they They couldn't believe it, but he's a great guy, and his partner is absolutely fantastic. And when they found out about all these tragedies that were happening across the country last fall, there were about 5 or 6 of them within a couple weeks period. And who knows if that was out of the ordinary, if it was just the media that was recently picking it up. I think it was more the previous. But he heard about this, and he was traveling back from one of his events that he does, and he called his partner, Terry, and he said, you know, I want to do something. I mean, life got a lot better for you and I. We have a son in Seattle, and, you know, they're married in Canada, their boyfriend's in the United States, and they want to tell that story. They want to tell these kids that one day life will get better, and we're making it better for you right now, and you just have to pull through. And no matter how hard it may seem right now, in a few days, in a few weeks, in a few months, once you graduate, once you become an independent person, your life is your own, and, you know, you can make what you want of it, and you can become whoever you want. So they made this video, and they, you know, spread it around to a few of their friends, and Dan is an active blogger, and so he knows a lot of bloggers who saw the video and felt inspired to make their own. 24 hours later, there was another video that popped up, and then within a week, there were about 1,000, and that's when
just to be very clear, sorry to interrupt, people were told to tag the videos. How did people know that it was a It Gets Better video?
Yeah, so what they did was, there was a YouTube channel that was set up, It Gets Better Project, and they could either tag it or add it to our queue, and that way we could go on it and approve it as one of our favorites. The problem that we did run into 3 or 4 days in, that Dan was working with Blue State Digital at the time, was that we kind of crashed our YouTube account because you couldn't have more than 500. Fortunately, we were able to get in touch with the good folks at YouTube who was able to retroactively up our limit back 4 years, which is why if you go to our YouTube channel, it says that we were created when YouTube was first created and not last year. So that's another funny tidbit. And I think they upped it to 5,000, but then they had to up it again a few months later. So now we have over 10,000 videos on YouTube and on our website, of people from politicians, celebrities, regular people, all sorts of varieties, lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgender, allies, which I think are the most important videos, who are telling these LGBT youth that, you know, there's nothing wrong with you, life does get better. And I think the major week of the campaign was when I was emailing with a few of my former colleagues about trying to get Hillary Clinton to do a video, and apparently her staff, they were all over this, and they had already asked her to do it, and she made a video, and they posted it up without even giving me a heads up. I saw this and almost flipped out, went back to my place, and immediately put it on our website and circulated it around. And then I got to thinking why the president didn't make one yet. And, you know, simply because Hillary made one and she cared, she just did it on her own. And then the president saw this, and the White House decided that this was an absolutely important cause to be a part of, and recorded a video right from the Oval Office. And the president told these LGBT youth that there's nothing wrong for them to be gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. There's nothing wrong. And that is remarkable to have a president say that. I don't think that we've ever had a president say something so powerful to LGBT youth before. And now I think our next step is to make sure that, you know, there's truth to those words. And, you know, while we are a 501c3, we do support any sort of legislation that, you know, fights the bullies and creates anti-bullying legislation that promotes equality for LGBT youth and LGBT community members. So after Obama made a video, we saw a bunch of other videos pop up, from the employees of Google to then the employees of Facebook, and then it just really took off from there. And at that point, I knew I had to drop out of school because it was just getting too much to handle while in class. So I got a team of volunteers out here in D.C. There was a team of volunteers out in L.A. with not just, you know, one lightning strike, that it had legs and that we had to let it continue because it's such an important message. And I think every LGBT person out there has an It Gets Better moment, no matter, you know, if they were thinking of hurting themselves at one point or not. But I think everyone thought one time or another that, you know, I'm not normal. And, you know, by seeing these videos and by seeing such a variety of these videos from, you know, gay rugby players to lesbian dairy farmers to all sorts of different types of videos, it is definitely helpful. Right now, and I'll get into more of what we're planning on doing in the future, but I think that that's kind of a good gist of where we're at the moment.
Right. Can you, that's great. It's a great introduction. Can you give us a sense, just from the first few weeks, you know, the magnitude of the impact? And I mean, I'm looking at the YouTube channel now, and you guys have, you know, a total of millions of views, it looks
sure.
You know, more than 2 million views of your channel, which is you know, doesn't even count the number of individual video views. It's the ninth most subscribed nonprofit on YouTube.
I forgot to
which is amazing. And, you know, how much of this was the early, like, takeoff excitement, and how much of it was, you know, in other words, spontaneous, just the meme grabbing hold and spreading because these are really compelling videos, like the one from the councilman in Fort Worth, Joel Burns, who, you know, gave this incredibly compelling personal speech. How much of it was that, and how much of it have you had to kind of prompt and you know, kind of fan the flames?
You know, I think the prompting is more making sure that there's a mechanism and a channel for people to respond to. There are a lot of, you know, people out there that have done nonprofit work before who say, you know, how do I do this for my organization? And, you know, there's no – everyone on this call knows that there's no viral button. It's not F12 like everyone thinks. Like, you really – you never know when it's going to happen. You just got to make sure that you're ready when it happens. And we – fortunately, we have the audience. You know, Dan Savage has an active following. He's connected to a lot of people. There was an emotional pull there. I mean, you don't get anything more direct at your heart than young kids who want to hurt themselves. And then we had kind of the mechanisms. We have a legal team. We have Dan's publicist. We had Blue State Digital. We had myself, who had was able to drop out of school in free time and, you know, work with Blue State Digital and make sure that, you know, the project had legs and continued on and on. We had the PR mechanism. We had friends in the PR world who would make sure to pitch the stories, and we talked to a few of the people to pitch videos at. But the great thing about it, because of all of that and because of all the volunteers that we had, it was really easy for people to get involved. And with the iPhone, with all sorts of new technology, making a video is no longer a high barrier app. And because we made it so easy and because, you know, everything else was there, it was easy to join. And, you know, I think the organic growth is key. And, you know, of the 10,000 videos that are on the site, we probably only asked about 100 of them to actually make the videos themselves. The rest of them have been through friends, through organic growth, through emails, through tweets, through Facebook and whatnot. So that's kind of the great thing about it, because it's not as much maintenance as needed. You don't need a large, you know, organization creating these videos. When you have all those different pieces playing together, you can really be lean and mean, and which has been great because we've been able to donate like over 90% of the income that we get in through donations to our beneficiary organizations.
Can you tell us how much the project has raised so far?
I don't know if I can say that just because I haven't cleared that with our board members, but I know the last reported number at the end of the year was over 100,000. It's gone up a pretty good amount since then. So that's the number that I'm sure I can report without getting into trouble.
And how do people just describe the sort of steps of engagement that you're trying to funnel people through, right? So somebody watching
right.
the video, and then at the end you are trying, are you adding sort of a pointer to the It Gets Better Project website? And then what are you trying
yeah.
to get people to do there? What are the, describe the ladders of engagement, I guess, is what I'm
yeah,
asking.
Sure, sure. You know, I think that, you know, if I did this myself and everything, and I would definitely blow it out with a ladder of engagement. We want to make sure that the campaign is authentic. We want to make sure that the Trevor Project gets proper shout out in each of these videos, that the number, the suicide hotline number gets mentioned. You know, and there are a number of ways that we can optimize many of these videos, but oftentimes authenticity is so much more important than optimization. And so while we've been trying to guide people to how to create videos and telling them don't make the video longer than 3 minutes because, A, I don't want to watch it because I've been improving most of them, and B, no one's going to watch it. If you go to YouTube Insights, most people drop off after 10 seconds of a video. So don't fade in from a block, or don't, you know, make your video interesting from right off the bat so you're engaging your audience right away. One of the things that we recommend people to do when they create their videos is be positive. Dan and Terry actually made a first video that, you know, was all sad and depressing about how they got bullied when they were younger, and then they watched it and they said, well, if I was a struggling kid and I watched this video, then, you know, it definitely doesn't get better. So they made another video, and the video that they made is, well, when I first saw it was way too long. It was impactful, and because there was such an emotional pull, I think people definitely did watch 8 minutes of that video, just like they watched the whole entire Joel Burns video that I think everyone, you know, shed a tear during that video, or the Pixar video, which is also one of my favorites. So I don't know if I answered your question per se, but
well,
I think that's the important thing.
Well, you answered part of it, which is what you're doing
yeah.
to sort of fine-tune or not fine-tune the videos that people submit.
Right.
But what I'm wondering is, because there are really two levels of participation, right? There
right.
are some people, a small group, though a really substantial, large, you know, 10,000 videos is a fantastic number. Lots of organizations imagine that they will get a lot of participation around submitting videos. And it's interesting to hear you say that you think the barrier to entry has really come down. I think many, many people, you know, try to solicit videos and people are still, you know,
right.
That's a fairly high, you know, barrier to cross for many people to
it
put
is.
Themselves up on video. So I'm wondering about the other group, which is the people who watch and share and
right.
hopefully, you know, join and donate.
I think that's a very good point. I mean, while we do have 10,000 videos, we have about, when you add up all the supporters and across all of our channels, there's over a quarter of a million people who are engaged. And I'm sure if we, you know, if I had a clone of myself or a whole team working with me, we could definitely have much higher. But I think the key is that when people go to our website, we do have a splash page that goes up. You join. It's a very quick, simple sign-up form, first name, last name, email address. You're taking a pledge. The pledge is a little higher barrier than what I would normally do with a nonprofit because you're actively saying, I promise to do this, as opposed to, oh, yeah, I support the project. So I think of that probably has hurt our numbers a little bit. But at the same time, whenever we send an email out, our open rates are higher than any other organization I've ever seen before. It's a fresh list. And, you know, I think that people can get engaged that way. And when you join our email list, you know, we send right at the moment, it's usually once a month or so. I'm trying to pick that up a little bit more just because we are seeing good, you know, reactions from that. But of course that does take manpower time that, you know, time is limited. You know, people can sign petitions, to school districts that are actually bullying LGBT youth. People can join GLSEN or the Trevor Project, which are two of our beneficiary organizations. GLSEN is the organization that fights for anti-bullying, well, I shouldn't say fight. They support anti-bullying legislation in schools and districts and states and federally across the country, and they do a fantastic job. It's why we give them money. Trevor Project, of course, is the National Suicide Hotline for LGBT youth and allies too. And they do a fantastic job too. So there are a number of ways that people can get involved now without making a video. I think one of the things that, you know, I've been in this bubble because I've been traveling around the country going to a lot of LGBT conferences, but I was recently down at Southwest in Austin, and, you know, there's a small gay population there. It was sometimes difficult to navigate the hipster and gay populations, but I think that, you know, when we were talking with people, I actually had to tell them what the It Gets Better project was, and that's just a reminder that we have to continue to broaden our base of support. And to go on another tangent, one of the big things at the project that we've been very strict on from the beginning is to remain mission-focused, but also remain an open-door policy. You know, even if you're not gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, you can still join our project. In fact, we encourage it. That's like the number one reason why It Gets Better, because, you know, my friends have my back. My straight friends have my back. And half the people that are signing up and taking our pledge online are actually straight. And I can't think of another gay rights movement or gay-related organization that can say the same thing. And that's one of the things that, you know, we want to keep on doing. We don't want to become, you know, too gay-centric and scare away, you know, our allies, because at the end of the day, nobody wants a young person to hurt themselves. It's why we want Republicans to make It Gets Better videos. It's why we want celebrities. It's why we want regular people to make videos.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should get involved for greater good.
Right, right. Let me ask you about, we could go in a number of directions, and I'm going to just ask a couple of quick questions, and then we'll open things up to people listening. One is, It Gets Better, the Trevor Project, Listen, you know, all the groups you're working with, these are all focused on the United States. But, you know, the internet doesn't know boundaries, right? So you've got to be reaching kids all over the world. What do you do with that? I mean, you know, if somebody from Turkey or Iran or wherever, you know, calls the number or emails,
mm-hmm.
Are you guys set up to help them or you know, is that a problem?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. It's something that it's hit me hard because I'm the one that's, you know, on our social media accounts, and I see that more than anyone else. We've talked about this. I think it's really easy for organizations to try to do too much too soon. We're obviously not set up to, you know, create a worldwide hotline. We're set up to, you know, be a channel and be a mechanism for individual activists who want to take part and help and join us. We're not going to replicate what GLSEN or the Trevor Project are doing. That would just be duplicitous and, in fact, just plain old stupid. We're going to support them. And, you know, one of the things that personally, I say this on behalf of myself, is I hate it when nonprofits and organizations, like, compete against each other. And, you know, we don't want to do that. On the international thing, we're seeing a tremendous amount of international support. So much so there's a significant amount of, and I was just trying to look up it now, of fans on our fan page who are from international countries. And I sometimes post things just targeted to those areas just to make sure that we're listening. The problem is that the Trevor Project is U.S.-based. We are mailing our T-shirts internationally when people want to order them, so that's great. But, you know, I'm actually flying to London tomorrow and meeting with Stonewall UK at the beginning of the week to see what else we can do internationally to work hand-in-hand with them. They've done a fantastic job, and Stonewall UK is I would call it the premier LGBT organization in England, who's done a fantastic job at getting their own It Gets Better videos from David Cameron, who made a video which completely shocked us almost as much as Barack Obama. So a lot of, you know, British soldiers. So, like, when the Don't Ask, Don't Tell fight was going on in the States, we would post the It Gets Better videos of British soldiers who are serving in the British military. You know, they've done a great job. And so, but that's just London. I mean, we're seeing a great amount of videos from all over the world. There was a Finnish It Gets Better video that I had to find a friend to actually translate it for me to make sure that they weren't off message. There are It Gets Better videos in India, all over the world, India, Poland, Japan, Taiwan, There was a activist that made one in Malaysia, and in Malaysia, it's you know, not really a safe area to be out and be gay. And he actually got some death threats, and he had to take his video down. So there are a lot of things that we need to do internationally to make sure that it does get better for international use. I think that, you know, right now, if we tried to, you know, do everything, I think we would, you know, do nothing. So we got to focus on one thing at a time. And at the moment, right now, we're focused on our It Gets Better book, which just came out last week. And I'm glad to announce that we just found out today that it hit the New York Times bestseller list after a week out. On Amazon.com. You can find out more at itgetsbetter.org/book. It includes 100 different compilations of essays from people who made videos to people who didn't make videos, like David Sedaris, about It Gets Better. And it's our goal to get this in every single school, library, across the country. You can donate $25 and dedicate one to your hometown. Or just buy it online, buy it on Amazon for $13, and just send it to a friend or something like that. That's just one of the ways that we're trying to expand our outreach. You know, we know that, you know, lightning only strikes once. So, you know, it's not like there's going to be a different project or anything. It's just going to be, it gets better, it gets bigger, and, you know, we go from there. What we do internationally, go for it.
Okay, well, one more question I'm going to ask, and then people, if you want to, folks who are listening, if you want to ask a question, just hit *6, and we'll start getting people into the Q&A queue. Tell me, how do you know, Scott, that the videos are being watched by the target audience? You know, if you look at some of the – and I actually want to ask you two questions. This is both related to YouTube, right? Because the YouTube Insight data – suggests that on at least some of these videos, they're very popular with 45 to 54-year-olds.
You're good.
You know, the parents' generation. So one question is to talk to us about, you know, what that means, if that is something to be concerned about or not. And then the other one, which, again, you know, since this is really about getting into the brass tacks, I see that on the videos you've left comments open. And as we all know, the Internet – especially, you know, places where you can make anonymous comments, can be incredibly nasty, and no doubt extremely nasty around, you know, gay and lesbian rights. So talk to us about that decision also.
There are a few things, and hopefully I won't go on too many tangents. But, I think our target audience, you know, our target audience was LGBT youth, and our main goal of the project was, you know, if we could – touch or change one life or save one life, you know, it was a smashing success. And we definitely passed that. We get emails every day, and you know, tweets and Facebook, you know, posts about how an It Gets Better video, you know, forced someone to, you know, not do the unthinkable. There was a email that the folks at Google got from someone who was actually searching how to commit suicide on YouTube, and they said, you know, a month ago I was doing this and I had pills in my hand and I saw these videos and it made me flush them down the toilet. You really don't get any closer to that to saving someone's life when you're not in the room. Like, this is done over the Internet. And so, you know, they emailed them to thank them, and they sent it to all their staff, and they sent it to us, and they're also working on their SEO right now so that when people search suicide on YouTube, our videos pop up, but also not just our videos, because, you know, our videos just say it gets better. It's not like – not all of them talk about the Trevor Project, but the Trevor Project number pops up, the hotline. You know, things like that, and we are working with Facebook, too, to do the same thing, because cyberbullying happens 24/7 these days. I don't know what it's like to grow up in a world these days with, you know, bullying happening that quickly. And what was the second question that you had?
It was about what the Insight data show that, you know, you're reaching a lot of 45-year-olds. What does that mean? And should people be concerned
about it? I think I really don't think I wouldn't be concerned about it. I mean, the more people that watch these videos, the better. You know, I'd rather have, like, a lot of 45-year-old people watch these videos because oftentimes they may be parents of kids who are questioning. And we've seen a lot of parents order the book for their kids and just to make it make sure that they know. And it's a touchy subject. It's really hard if you're a parent to know that your kid may be gay and to not know how to talk about it because you don't want to scare them away. But sometimes a book or sometimes a website is a way to do it. And, you know, there was a story that Dan talks about on the road that, it's in our book. Let's see if I can pull it up really quickly. Okay, I have it right here. I'll say it really quickly. This is an excerpt from our book. A few weeks after we launched the It Gets Better Project, this letter arrived for me and my husband. Thank you for the It Gets Better Project. My son is 14 and a sophomore in high school in rural Kentucky. He isn't athletic. He isn't religious. He isn't in ROTC. He's constantly being called gay, faggot, oftentimes by people he thought were his friends. So far, it hasn't gone beyond name-calling, but I worry. I showed him your site one day, and it went live. He sat down and watched the video that you and Terry put up. Since then, I've seen him checking the site out on his own. I don't know if he's gay, but I do know that your message has touched him. Although he does confide that 4 years is still a long time to wait for things to get better, I think that seeing so many other people say the same thing holds so much more weight than having his mother tell him. So thank you again for sharing. So, I don't think it gets more powerful than that. And, you know, no matter, I wouldn't overanalyze the ages of people that are watching this because, you know, at the end of the day, the kids are seeing it.
And the older generation may be the one that has to change the most in terms of attitudes.
Right.
Okay, we're at the halfway point. Let's go to folks who are listening to the call. We have a lot of people who are listening, and we are talking with Scott Zumwalt from the It Gets Better Project. And so if you have a question, hit *6 on your phone so that we can get you into the queue, and we will try and get the first person on to ask a question. Just introduce yourself and keep your question short, if you would. Go ahead.
Hi there. I think it's me.
Yeah.
My name is Tracy. I'm in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. And my question is just about the volunteer coordination, how you're going about working with volunteers in two different regions in the country and with an almost all volunteer team, how you've been able to just organize the volunteers and coordinate that effort.
Great question.
We get a lot of people who say that they want to volunteer, and, you know, it pains me to not have, you know, a volunteer coordinator staffer who can be like, do this, do that, or, you know, to have a field office like I had on a political campaign. And I think the number one thing that we tell people is, you know, because we are an online campaign, it's truly organic. We have an action center on our website, itgetsbetter.org/action. It's not fancy, but it has like 12 different things that you can do to spread the word. And really, spreading the word is the absolute key. As for the volunteers themselves, it was a small group of people who Dan, myself, and a bunch of folks at Blue State Digital trusted to, you know, be on call 24/7 and so that we wouldn't drive ourselves crazy to approve some of these videos because we didn't want to post every video to our website. It's great for a video to live on YouTube. We're not going to refuse a video on YouTube. But we want to make sure the videos that are on our It Gets Better website send the almost as perfect of a message as we would tell it through different voices. And so I think they helped out a lot with it. Then we have a number of volunteers now. Fortunately, it's calmed down where we've become more lean and mean, and we can delegate better. And we have, you know, book publicists who are dealing with all the book stuff and a lot of different organizations that are pro bono and helping out. So I think that's the piece. In terms of in other countries, if you're interested in volunteering, you know, spread the word. We have no problems with people holding events. in honor of It Gets Better, send us an email at info@itgetsbetter.org. We'll hopefully get back to you soon. We're a little overloaded, but feel free to host an event. We have an events functionality on our site. I'm about to unleash our fundraising thermometer functionality with personal fundraising pages so people can, you know, sponsor pride runs later this spring for It Gets Better and stuff like that.
Great. Okay, we're going to take another question. Looks like from someone with a cell phone with the 720 area
yep,
code.
That's me. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Tell
okay.
us your name
Hi,
and ask your question. Hey.
Will do. My name is Lori Phillips. I'm a doctoral student studying LGBT advertising and public relations. I'm specifically interested in learning a little bit more about the vetting process for the videos. So if anybody can upload a video on YouTube, and if all of the same videos are cross-posted on the It Gets Better website and YouTube, and sort of if there are really all 10,000 videos up currently.
Sure. There are 10,000 videos on YouTube. The ones that are on our website, I think, are probably like 2,500 or something like that. Honestly, the last I did a number check just because it takes some time. Was a few months ago, but we've worked with some good folks at YouTube and YouTube Trends to, you know, try to see if we can calculate that. All I know is that if you watch every single It Gets Better video straight on YouTube, it would take over 3 months. So you can imagine how long it takes me and a few of my friends originally that first month or two of very little sleep and such to watch all these. As for the vetting process, you know, there's really not that much to the vetting process. The vetting process is, you know, ideally we like shorter videos, and we want people to keep it positive. We don't really, at first we were hesitant to post videos of people who made songs over their videos just because there are a lot of copyright issues with YouTube and we don't want to get into some legal trouble. But, you know, we're never going to say no to someone who wants to upload a YouTube video on their own. The ones that we put on our site are the ones that, you know, we see that, you know, send a good message. And oftentimes we don't see them all. So if you see that your video is not on there and you want it on there, like, send us an email info@itgetsbetter.org because we may have missed it. It's one of the there was a while where every single day there was another great video that just popped up out of nowhere and it made our day. So I think that's the key there.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, Scott, could you just say a little bit more? I'm not sure if you answered the question fully about sure. comments, leaving comments.
Oh, comments, that's right. So yeah. Comments have been difficult, and that's actually one of the reasons why they needed help initially. Dan and Terry were just, their computer shut down. They were getting, first of all, they didn't know that they could disable the email notifications on comments. And
no,
so their computer is like completely overloaded and like their mailbox is just flying all over the place. And he had to like shut his computer down because it was going nuts. But the comments on YouTube are strange. I think that for anyone who's posted a YouTube video, you have to wonder, who are these people that are posting comments on some of these YouTube videos? A large proportion of them are great, but then you get these, I don't know if there are people who are just trapped in a cage all day, who are just, you know, posting terrible things, but, you know, there's only so much you can do, and honestly, I'd rather keep the comments open than to close them. I'm a big fan of open communication. I think that whenever someone may have some sort of criticism of the It Gets Better project, one of them originally was, oh, what's with these two white guys who take their kids to Paris? Like, you know, who are they? Like, I'm never going to be that way. And that's when we talk about, oh, look at all these other videos on our website from people of different backgrounds where it got better for them. They're just one of the 10,000 videos that are on the site. As for the YouTube comments, you know, we tried to moderate. I wish, you know, I overworked many of my volunteers, and I definitely overworked Blue State Digital and pushed them, like, to the limit on how much they could help us. And we tried to, you know, do as much moderating as possible, and we still try to. But what's great about it is that the community does respond to these comments. So if people do say negative things on Facebook or negative things on our social media, people are smart and people are kind and people reply and say, you shouldn't do that. And it's kind of a testament of this organic user-generated campaign because, you know, we have volunteers out there who are helping us out without even asking us.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, and I think it's a hard one to pin down exactly because I think most organizations, if they were doing something like this, that, you know, sort of started less organically, right?
Right.
If you post videos on controversial subjects,
right.
They will often attract, you know, really polarizing and often ugly comments. And
right.
Your point is that because this has somehow been much more organically driven, keeping comments open actually gives the community that wants to support this message a way to keep fighting for the positive side of the message. And if you shut off comments, in some ways you would almost like be saying to people on both sides, you know, both the community of support as well as the weirdos or whoever it is who wants to criticize you, you'd be driving it away. And so if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying
yeah.
It's better to stay open and risk a little bit of nastiness because in the long run it's healthier.
Yeah, and you know, make sure you have someone check it every now and then. I think that we could be doing a better job at it. The other thing is that when you disable comments, your videos are going to show up less often in related videos than on YouTube search. You know, it's what they tell you. You know, if you the more a video is commented on, the more it's going to show up. So actually, at the end of the day, when people are posting negative comments on your video, more people are going to see your video. So thanks for those comments.
That's very interesting. Okay, let's take another call. This is from somebody, looks like, in Washington, Forum for Youth.
Hi, yes. This is Allison. I'm calling from sparkaction.org, which is a side project of the Forum for Youth Investment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about your process of going from a totally online project to print and kind of what you did to get everything, all that material and action online and put it into a book and inspire people that way.
Yeah, that was a fun process. let me take a step back, something that I didn't talk about. We are a 501c3, and we are a 501c3 thanks to Dan's publicist, who had previously had a nonprofit that was already, you know, approved called Artists Give Back. And, you know, they were funding different programs, I think locally on the West Coast. And then when it gets better happen, they said, you know, it's going to take weeks or months for a 501c3 to get approved. Let's just roll this over and have it be DBA'd as it gets better. It's from the Iola Foundation to it gets better. So that worked really well because we were able to take in contributions within a few weeks of launching the project. Had we been able to take in contributions overnight, I'm sure we would have raised a tremendous amount of money. But, you know, honestly, we care more about, you know, if people want to donate to the Trevor Project directly, donate to Trevor because all the money's got, like, the money's being split up between them. So, you know, it's all going for good causes. So initially we were forwarding people to Trevor and Glisten and fortunately we're able to get the merchant account set up and work with Blue State Digital on getting our fundraising pages set up. On transferring over a online, you know, campaign to a print campaign. You know, it's really interesting because it's usually the opposite. And maybe now we're trending towards, you know, online inspires print. I think that, you know, one of the things that is that we had a few folks who've done this before. Dan has written a number of books. Terry has been at his side for doing it. And Terry Miller really took the lead on the book. He worked with a couple of friends of ours out in the Pacific Northwest to cull through some of the videos that may turn into great stories, to contact all 100 or more people who would be interested in being part of the book, working with them on editing their transcripts into more complete pieces or essays. Because some of the videos, people didn't know that it would become a big deal. I mean, had it become a big deal, I think Dan Savage would have shaved in his first video. So I think that that's one of the things that he was working on. And the book got printed within 6 months, and it's really a testament of the great folks at Dutton, at Penguin, and Pearson, who got this book together. We were able to go on a book tour last week in 5 different cities, and now it's a New York Times bestseller. So, you know, I can't even – I'm still in the reactionary phase of how we got that done. But I think it involved a lot of great delegation because, you know, the only part that I played in the book development was making sure, because I had seen most of the videos, sending them some of the more moving videos that included a wide spectrum of people from celebrities, politicians, to, you know, just real people. Like, randomly, a kid who went to my high school, who at the time we both thought we were straight, is featured in our book. So it's really something special to see that happen.
Great. Okay, we have time for a couple more calls. Hi, you're on. Tell us your name and ask your question.
I guess I think it's me. This is Addison.
Yep.
I'm in New York. And I guess my question, I work in the philanthropic sector, and my question was just, and I'm sorry if this is something that's been answered in any sort of coverage you might have gotten, but just to get a sense of, I mean, y'all essentially started as an idea, so sort of started from scratch and online tools. But through you all, it seems that there's been some incredible fundraising that's been able to sort of flow through to the Trevor Project and to GLSEN. And can you just sort of give a sense of budgets and sort of, you know, and sort of resources in that way that y'all have been able to marshal?
Sure. Yeah, it's difficult because we're in startup mentality. And I guess, like, I have – my background is essentially in startups, working for a lot of political campaigns from the get-go. So – and you know, we had a lot of great, smart, intelligent people who were working on this project pro bono. For the first 6 months, I've been doing it pro bono because I knew I was going to be taking a year off for school anyway. But I know that's just so important for me to make sure that this project was a success. As for budget, you know, we wanted to keep it lean and mean. We wanted to make sure that the money that we were raising was going directly to help LGBT youth. And that was through, you know, donations to GLSEN, to the Trevor Project, and now the ACLU LGBT Project, who, you know, holds school boards accountable for kids that are bullied in their schools. I think I first got involved, actually, it was like, a week after it started, 5 of my friends hosted a fundraiser in Washington, D.C., and it was supposed to be a small fundraiser where we only would raise $1,000. And in 5 days, we raised $10,000 and had a packed house of 500 people at Duke Book Steiner in Washington, D.C., and it inspired me to get involved in this project, and it's why I was so happy to get engaged. For long-term budget, I mean, we've made a lot of money selling T-shirts. I think that there's such a for a project and foundation, you know, it's difficult to ask for money when people could just donate to the organizations themselves. Like, you know, why would I donate to It Gets Better when I could just donate right to the Trevor Project? The key that we were thinking of is, okay, well, we have such a powerful brand and, you know, everyone likes an American Apparel T-shirt, so let's make an It Gets Better American Apparel T-shirt and sell them on our website for $30 and have, you know, it costs about $10 with fulfillment and making the T-shirts. We got a special deal from American Apparel. And then the rest goes to, you know, us and, you know, the Trevor Project, GLSEN, and the ACLU LGBT Project. I think that we've had the limited costs that we've had are, you know, travel if I have to go to, like, the Gay Task Force Conference in Minneapolis or some small things like that. I think that we are evolving, and that's one of the things that we're thinking about as we move along. We're meeting over the next couple months to see, you know, where we go from here, how the organization shifts and grows even more. We're talking to a number of corporate partners because, you know, we do need – if we had a little bit more capital right now, I know that we could be doing a lot more. It's just that we're kind of just going with the flow and, you know, selling books and selling T-shirts.
Great. Another call, another question, I should say. This looks like it's from 212 area code. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, I'm Chelsea Whitaker. I'm from SankeyNet. We do consulting and online marketing for nonprofits. My question is about what your long-term plans are for the people who specifically take the pledge. So you get their email address, and your kind of idea is to keep those people in a communication stream of some kind? Or what is kind of the long-term plans for cultivating people who've either submitted videos, watched videos, shared videos, or signed the pledge?
Fantastic question. It's something that we definitely need to use. We have such a powerful advocacy list that we're growing right now that's new, it's organic, and it takes action. And I think that any organization would love that. I'd love to do more to promote anti-bullying legislation in states. We might have to work with our lawyers to see how we could work that out. I'd love to do more to promote the Trevor Project, the events that they're having, send out resources and tips to people so that they can tell the signs of when an LGBT youth might be going through a hard time and how they could, help them along. I think that we do want to remain mission focused. There is a tendency for, gay organizations to all march along the same tune, and that's actually not beneficial. While it's on the same message, we sway away from our original mission, which is telling kids that it gets better, making sure they have access to the suicide hotline, and making sure we're working with lessons to make sure there are safe spaces in schools throughout the country. I'm open to any ideas that other people may have. It's kind of, we are kind of flying by the seat of our pants. We do kind of have a template plan, but, every week or so things change because just like last week, the Arkansas House passed anti-bullying legislation, and we were not expecting that. So, things change, and we do want to keep the audience engaged. We do want to keep people informed. We don't want to hit them over the head with the same thing multiple times in a row, like, keep watching our videos, keep watching our videos, keep watching our videos. But, hey, one example would be, check out this video from the ACLU LGBT Project. Did you know that many schools filter their web accounts to pro-LGBT sites? And there's something you can do about it. Click here to take action. I mean, there are a number of things that we could be doing, but just, feel free to send me a note and let me know if you have any thoughts.
So I have one or two sort of closing questions.
Sure.
So if anybody else has a question they want to ask, we do have a few more minutes, and you just have to hit *6 to get into the queue. My question is, and I don't know if anyone can answer this really, but why didn't one of the existing organizations do this already?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was, do you have any perspective on that? And the second piece of that is, given what you know about the people who have joined in to participate, how many of them are longtime activists in the gay and lesbian community who have been attracted to this because it's something new and more organic, as you would put it, and how many of them are, like, completely new? Do you have any feeling for those things?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And I'm, somewhat new to the LGBT advocacy world just because I was so busy in other advocacy projects and nonprofit work before this, so I didn't really have the time. I've learned a lot about, LGBT advocacy politics, inside politicking, since then. I don't, want to say anything negative about anyone. I think that we all have our place. I think that there is definitely a role for, legacy organizations. There's definitely a role for actual service organizations. There's a role for single-issue advocacy organizations. And if we all work together, we will actually make it better. So, I don't know if the project would have been successful had it been born out of a specific organization, just because there is an organic, movement-y type nature to it that people, are attracted to it. They don't feel like they're being force-fed this by someone else. This is, I made a video, and I'm just as part of this project as all other 10,000 people who've made videos too. The video that, Barack Obama made is just as important as the video that the kid from my high school made, as long as they both saved one life. Like, we don't have preference over one over the other. We might think some are cooler than others, but If they have an impact, then that makes a difference. I really don't know if I can answer your question, just because, you know, I think organizations can replicate something along these lines, but there were just so many variables that came, like, together at the same time that enabled this project to succeed, and it wasn't planned.
Right.
And which is why I give kudos to all those projects out there that were planned and actually did take off and go viral. Because I've tried to done it before. I've worked for a number of political candidates that couldn't make it out of the water. So.
Yeah, right, right. Well, I suppose there's still a little mystery to it, though. I, you know, to maybe offer a little of the PDF perspective on this, you know, one of the things we've been saying for a long time is that as the barriers to entry drop, you know, the ability to launch campaigns around causes is now in the hands of everybody. And, you know, the truth is that many more people will start things than succeed. But it's so easy to start and try things. And it gets better really shows the potential of, you know, just what a small group of people can do these days. And, you know, hopefully it's also a lesson to legacy organizations to maybe let people inside those organizations try things that are a little unorthodox, and not, you know, worry about controlling every factor in advance. Seeing what can happen.
And I'll just quickly add on to that. You know, I've worked for very, very large, some of the largest nonprofits in the world, and, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Oftentimes they'll just get embroiled in bureaucracy, and, you know, the very cool, innovative project that you came up with gets either neutered or watered down into something that, you know, can't take off because you're handcuffed behind your back.
Mm-hmm.
When we are lean and mean, and when we do have a user-generated organic campaign, it provides us with a lot of flexibility, and it provides us to promote that, you know, gay or no, that transsexual porn star, It Gets Better video, because he made it, and he made a video, and we're not going to reject the video. You know, if he made that video for any other organization, they probably would have been like, no, we don't want to be associated with that. But he made it, and thousands of people watched it, and it probably did touch someone's life somewhere out there who are relating to him. It's one of our favorite videos that Dan talks about all the time on the road. So I think that lack of bureaucracy and ability to work just as fast as, you know, new media works these days was absolutely key. And I think my advice to all these other organizations is to empower your new media and social media departments to really lead the way and try new things. And if it doesn't work out, so what? Move on. Go to the next thing. Otherwise, you're just cutting yourself off to such future growth.
Right, right. Great point. Well, this has been a fantastic call. Thank you so much, Scott Zumwalt from It Gets Better. And thanks, everybody, to listening. Just a couple of quick announcements to let you know about our next call 2 weeks from now on April 14th at 1 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be talking about social media and Congress, and how people inside Congress are using social media to change their relationship with their constituents. We're going to have the new media directors for two members, Jarrett Lansing, who is the new media director for Pete Roskam from Illinois, and Seamus Kraft, who directs new media for Daryl Issa from California. That'll be a really, really interesting call with folks from the new Republican majority in the House offering their perspective on how they're trying to transform the relationship between constituents and representatives using new media. Again, thank you to N10 for partnering with us on this week's call, and AT&T is our ongoing sponsor for these PDF network calls. If you have any ideas or requests for future calls or speakers or topics, please email us at network@personaldemocracy.com. Reminder of these calls, we've opened them up and they're free through the end of May. So tell your friends to sign up and listen in, or check out the podcasts online at personaldemocracy.com. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us, Scott. And
thank you.
See you online. Take care, everyone.